Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show, conservative talk radio covering the issues that concern you here on the BBS Radio Network. It was about a week past Election Day, November 3, 2020. We Trump supporters were still in shock, receiving bad election news after bad election news, and witnessing what we all agreed upon, which was the theft of the election, where the what turned out to be radical leftist, Joe Biden, had seemingly snatched electoral victory from the proverbial jaws of defeat. Incredulously, we kept watching as our illustrious mainstream Communist Chinese Party-serving media reported on more and more late votes being received and counted for old Joe in the key swing states, ultimately handing him electoral victory, which was then rammed through with congressional approval on January 6, 2021. Attempts by President Donald Trump's campaign to question and investigate the endless reports of election irregularities, outright fraud, and cover-ups were constantly dismissed with contempt by mainstream media types as nutcase conspiracy theories. And perhaps more shockingly, much of our obviously corrupt, intimidated, or otherwise compromised judiciary supported these many election anomalies, ruling time and again that Trump supporters had no standing to question them, or that these anomalies were not anomalies, etc. And this went on right up to the U.S. Supreme Court. There, when Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, joined by 17 or was it 18 other states, asked the high court to stay congressional appointment of Joe Biden as president until a thorough investigation of the election fraud allegations could be done, based on all the evidence at the time, the Trump's nominees to the court, Barrett, Kavanaugh, and Gorsuch, joined Chief Justice Roberts and the court's three leftists in refusing to even consider the appeal, for which they gave no explanation. But this act thus ensured Biden's installation in the White House. Quote, "The people have spoken," unquote, said Biden's longtime Senate buddy, then majority leader and also badly CCP compromised Mitch McConnell, as he moved to vote to give Biden the presidency. In the week after Election Day, I was searching the internet for election news and came across a website which claimed that, based on analysis of the Pennsylvania Secretary of State's office and that data presented by an election service of the New York Times, a very strange thing happened in Pennsylvania's 2020 election data. Regrettably, I did not do screen captures of this website at the time, so this is based on my recollection of what I saw there. But the website stated that on the Thursday following Election Day, November 5, 2020, about 10 a.m., the state had recorded something like 95,000 new votes come pouring in, all but about 5,000 of which were purportedly cast for Joe Biden. The remainder were for Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate. And besides all this bizarre information, the website said that by the end of the day, the Secretary of State's office only showed some 8,000 new votes having been received and counted. This would indicate that almost 90,000 other votes had mysteriously been deleted from voting records. In the end, didn't Joe Biden win the state of Pennsylvania by some 80,000 votes? All this was yet another of the many bizarre and mysterious 2020 election anomalies that were never satisfactorily investigated or explained, to my knowledge. Trump spokeswoman Liz Harrington has stated that some 120,000 more votes were counted in the 2020 election in Pennsylvania than people there who voted. And this has never been resolved, to my knowledge. Then there was Michigan, where, if I recall his comments correctly, election integrity advocate, retired U.S. Air Force Lieutenant General Thomas McInerney, has observed that early in the morning of November 4, 2020, the day after Election Day, some 140,000 new votes for Joe Biden mysteriously appeared and were counted, handing Biden the presidential contest win in that state. Of course, the hysterical and corrupt mainstream media pundits were quick to claim that votes like these were merely the result of mail-in ballots being received and counted. But as election integrity activist Mike Lindell has noted, almost all mail-in and absentee ballots had been counted by Election Day across the nation. As General McKinnity stated in his new book, Invisible Treason in America, co-authored with several other people, the troubled 2020 election, quote, will go down as the most corrupt in U.S. history, close quote. But then again, I'd say this will depend on who controls the narrative. Attempts at seriously investigating the 2020 election, McKinnity continues in the book's chapter 4, titled Stolen Election 2020, quote, has since been avoided, even covered up, by both political parties, state governments, U.S. government agencies, and here he puts in parentheses, DOJ, Homeland Security, FBI, close parentheses, big tech, mainstream media, and wealthy Americans like Mark Zuckerberg, George Soros, and Bill Gates, to name a few. Years have passed, but any discussion or debate about 2020 election fraud can get you banned on social media. End quote. What we can deduce from all this is that much of the country's political, social, and governmental establishment were supporting and even cheering on this election coup, if not actively involved in it. And yes, I know it's a lot to swallow to even imagine that so much of our establishment could even support such an apocalypse for our country. But as Trump has observed, the evidence for it is overwhelming and irrefutable. So why would Donald Trump have been so hated and feared, and undoubtedly still is, that such massive, well-organized, and successful election fraud have taken place? As I see it, the answer is complicated. But suffice it to say, one big reason is the unquestionable, enormously powerful influence of Communist China, specifically the Communist Chinese Party, or CCP, on America. It's no secret the CCP greatly feared and opposed the ideas and policies of Donald Trump and wanted him out, openly and, if you believe all the evidence for it, secretly, supporting Trump's replacement with Joe Biden, who along with his family members have irrefutably received tens of millions of dollars in direct payments from individuals and entities associated with the CCP. In this regard, as was played in an audio file on our last program, and which you will hear again in a video clip played on today's program, Peter Schweitzer, author of the new book, Blood Money, Why the Powerful Turn a Blind Eye While China Kills Americans, the business partner of the CCP-controlled gangster who set up the deadly synthetic opioid fentanyl smuggling operation in Mexico, gave the Biden family a forgivable $5 million loan, which they have never paid back. Is it any wonder then, Schweitzer speculates, that Joe Biden is essentially doing nothing to stop the flow of fentanyl being smuggled into the U.S. and killing hundreds of thousands of Americans? Let's watch and listen to Schweitzer's comments about this in an interview he did recently with conservative podcaster Dinesh D'Souza and shown on Rumble.com.
How do the Chinese look at the world now? What do they make of America's position in the world? And what do you think their next move is?
Well, I think they view the United States as effectively a paper tiger. It's weak. It doesn't mean it doesn't have political strength and economic strength. It's just that it has poor leadership, and they're exploiting that. And they've embraced a doctrine called disintegration warfare. It was a book written in 2010 by Chinese military officials. It's been embraced by President Xi. And this strategy, I've laid it out in a book that's just coming out by me called Blood Money. And what this disintegration warfare, Dinesh, really says is, rather than going head-to-head with the United States, we are going to seek ways that we can fragment America and disintegrate America and exploit its weaknesses and its divisions. And they are certainly doing that with Joe Biden. If I can just give you one brief example of how this works, Dinesh, we've got this massive problem with fentanyl in the United States. And as I lay out in Blood Money, it's really the drug cartels are the junior partners. This is a Chinese operation through and through. And I laid that out. So why is Joe Biden not doing anything about it? Well, consider this. The Sinaloa cartel in Mexico, who are the kings of fentanyl, were set up in the business by a Chinese criminal gang called UBG. Everybody in Mexico acknowledges this. The head of that gang is a guy named Zhang Anlo, who goes by the name White Wolf. White Wolf had a business partner who in 2017 gave a $5 million forgivable loan to the Bidens, which they, of course, have never paid back. So you've literally got one degree of separation between the fentanyl trade and the Biden family. So it's not a surprise to me that Joe Biden does not want to talk about this subject, does not want to finger point at China or do anything about it. And it's the sort of thing that the Chinese seek to exploit and take advantage of.
While we're on the subject of fentanyl being smuggled along with illegal immigrants pouring into the U.S. from Mexico, let's look at a couple of recent video clips related to this madness of these millions of illegals from all over the world being facilitated by the criminal Biden administration. What else do you call a regime that is openly encouraging and funding this unprecedented mass illegal immigration with apparently billions, from what I have seen, billions of U.S. taxpayer dollars? I know the U.S. Senate amazingly, incredibly, just passed a bill to make legal the Biden administration's refusal to obey U.S. immigration laws. Thankfully, at least for the present, this monstrously insane bill is bottled up in the House of Representatives. But for how long? The first clip is from the NewYorkPost.com's website earlier this month, where hundreds of illegals are shown rushing wildly and overcoming U.S. authorities guarding the border in El Paso. Now watch this next clip of an illegal Venezuelan migrant named Leonel Moreno on TikTok, where he reportedly has a following of more than 500,000 people, in which he urges mi gente, my people, in other words, fellow illegal immigrants, to seize vacant U.S. homes to occupy them and claim as their own. This clip was rebroadcast March 28 on Britain's DailyMail.com.
Mi gente, he pensado invadir una casa en United States, ya que me enteré que existe una ley que dice que si una casa no está habitada, podemos expropiarla. Capichi, muchachos, aquí en United States también se aplica la de invasión de terreno. Y creo que ese será mi próximo negocio. Invadir casas abandonadas, ya que me he buscado unos códigos con mis amigos africanos. Y me dijeron que ya llevan como 7 casas expropiadas. Y como dice el dicho, papi, hay que buscar la vuelta. Y la vuelta ahorita mismo es invadir casas, ya que nos encontramos en situación de calle y es la única manera que tenemos para no vivir en la calle y no ser una carga pública. Capichi, la ley dice que las casas abandonadas, deterioradas y que esté en mal estado, podemos llegar y repararlas, vivir en ella y si podemos venderla, hasta pedir créditos con ella. ¿Qué dicen ustedes?
As you probably know, The razor-thin Republican majority in the U.S. House of Representatives recently voted to impeach U.S. Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas for refusing to follow U.S. immigration laws and willfully encouraging this staggering mass illegal immigration madness into the U.S. Of course, Mayorkas is only doing what he's told to do by his masters in the Biden regime and elsewhere. And the U.S. government, as I said, is taking billions of your taxpayer dollars to facilitate it all. Here's a replay of a video clip we played on a previous program whereby conservative commentator Mark Levin on his Life, Liberty, and Levin TV program on Fox lays out the legal case for impeaching Mayorkas. And as Levin advocates at the end of the clip, also for impeaching Joe Biden.
Hello, America. I'm Mark Levin, and this is Life, Liberty, and Levin Sunday. You know, we hear a lot about the law, the Constitution. Most of it is superficial. Most of the information you get about it from the media, especially news platforms, is false. Some of it outright lies, much of it influenced by the Democrat Party and the Democrats within the media and so forth. One of the issues that's been front and center is impeachment. Impeachment of Mayorkas, the secretary of DHS, a cabinet officer. And what you're hearing, the mantra is you don't impeach somebody based on policy differences, and you don't impeach somebody and open the door wide so that they can then return and impeach you. Of course, we get this mostly from people who brought two outrageous impeachments against Donald Trump that do not stand on the Constitution. So let's dig into this briefly. You'll be more knowledgeable than any legal analyst, any former federal prosecutor, any former federal judge, or anybody else on TV and radio. And I'll tell you why. The greatest book ever written by impeachment was written in 1973 by Raoul Berger. He's deceased, but the former professor at Harvard Law School. And he was acknowledged as such, probably the greatest constitutional scholar of modern times. And he wrote a book, Impeachment, the Constitutional Problems, as I say, 1973. Stick with me. I just want to give you the basis for this. What exactly is a high crime? You've heard people say impeachment is whatever Congress says it is. No, it's not. It is a constitutional process. Congress has limitations, too, but it also has obligations. Well, what do we mean by misdemeanors, actual crimes? No, high crimes and misdemeanors never meant actual crimes. Listen to this. High crimes and misdemeanors are a category of political crimes against the state. What's a political crime? It's not a criminal code crime against the state. What they meant by that is an attack on the society, on the civil society, on the culture, on the governing system, and so forth. Not policy disagreements, not even strong policy disagreements. You take an oath to uphold the Constitution. If you're not upholding the Constitution, if you're rogue and you're violating federal law, that is a political crime against the body politic. That's what they mean by that. Whereas misdemeanors per se describe criminal sanctions for private wrongdoings. He goes on. He says, high crimes and misdemeanors appear to be words of art confined to impeachments without roots in the ordinary criminal law and which, so far as I can discover, he said, had no relation to whether an indictment would lie in the particular circumstances. What the framers of your Constitution did is they spent an enormous amount of time debating impeachment. The first issue they debated the most was this creation of an executive, a presidency, what it would look like, and so forth and so on. The second biggest issue was impeachment. They looked at English common law. They went back all the way to the 1300s. They looked at how Parliament handled, quote unquote, impeachment vis-a-vis the king. And they looked at as much historical information as they could in order to come up with the language. They rejected maladministration because they thought, well, if we say maladministration is a basis for impeachment, then Congress will always be able to blackmail a president. So it's not what Congress says it is. It's what the framers of the Constitution meant it to be. What is the language in the Constitution? Article 2, Section 4. The president, vice president, and all civil officers, that would be cabinet secretaries, of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, and other high crimes and misdemeanors, and other high crimes and misdemeanors. The path by which the framers arrived at this language is traceable in the records of the Constitutional Convention itself through Madison's notes. So we know where this comes from. Some uneasiness apparently was excited by the breadth of the power of impeachment, for there were repeated assurances that impeachment was meant only for, quote, great injuries, quote, great misdemeanors. James Irida, later on the Supreme Court himself, told the North Carolina Convention that the occasion for its exercise, that is impeachment, will arise from acts of great injury to the community, to the nation. Impeachment, said Governor Johnston in that convention, quote, is a mode of trial pointed out for great misdemeanors against the public, great offenses against society. From James Wilson, Wilson was a great delegate from Pennsylvania. His expression of hope in the Pennsylvania convention that impeachments, quote, will seldom happen. It is inferable that he, too, was concerned only with serious misconduct. So the question is whether the impeachment of Mayorkas was policy, maladministration, and therefore illegitimate, as the Democrats and the media and three Republicans keep telling you, or whether it was legitimate. So let's actually look at the articles of impeachment, which I don't think any news platform has done, and actually read from some of this. Is it policy? Is it politics? Is it opinion? Or is it clear violations, intentional, repeated violations of law, pattern of lies to the other branch of government, Congress, and to the American people? Number one, Alejandro Mayorkas willfully refused to comply with the detention mandate set forth in Section 235B2A of the Immigration and Nationality Act, requiring that all applicants for admission who are not clearly and beyond a doubt entitled to be admitted shall be detained for a removal proceeding. Instead of complying with this requirement, Mayorkas implemented a catch-and-release scheme whereby such aliens are unlawfully released, even without effective mechanisms to ensure appearances before the immigration courts for removal proceedings or to ensure removal in the case of aliens ordered removed. Number two, Mayorkas willfully refused to comply with the detention mandate set forth in another section of federal law, 235B1B2 of such act, requiring that an alien who is placed into expedited removal proceedings and determined to have a credible fear of prosecution, quote, shall be detained for further consideration of the application for asylum. Instead of complying with this requirement, Mayorkas implemented a catch-and-release scheme where such aliens are unlawfully released, even without effective mechanisms, to ensure appearances before the immigration courts for removal proceedings or to ensure removal in the case of aliens ordered removed. Two violations of the federal immigration law. Clear as day. But there's more. Three, Mayorkas willfully refused to comply with the detention set forth in Section 235B1B3-4 of the Act, requiring that an alien who is placed into expedited removal proceedings and determined not to have a credible fear of persecution, quote, shall be detained until removed, unquote. Instead of complying with this requirement, Mayorkas has implemented a catch-and-release scheme whereby such aliens are unlawfully released, even without effective mechanisms to assure appearances before the immigration courts for removal proceedings or to ensure removal in case of aliens ordered removed. That's why people say follow the existing federal immigration laws. We don't need any more laws. The laws are extensive. They are precise. They require people to be held. They require people to be deported. It gives them certain due process rights under administrative law judges. All of that's been bulldozed by Mayorkas and Biden. Four, Mayorkas willfully refused to comply with the detention mandate set forth in Section 236C of the Act, requiring that a criminal alien who is inadmissible or deportable on certain criminal and terrorism-related grounds, quote, shall be taken into custody when the alien is released from law enforcement custody. Instead of complying with this requirement, Mayorkas issued, quote, guidelines for the enforcement of civil immigration laws, which instructs Department of Homeland Security, DHS officials, that, quote, the fact an individual is removable non-citizen should not alone be the basis of an enforcement action against them, and that DHS personnel should not rely on the fact of conviction alone, even with respect to aliens subject to mandatory arrest and detention, pursuant to the law. So he supersedes the law with a memo. Number five, Mayorkas willfully refused to comply with the detention mandate set forth in Section 241A2, the Immigration Act, requiring that an alien ordered removed, quote, shall be detained during the removal period. Instead of complying with this mandate, Mayorkas issued, again, his own memo, Guidelines for the Enforcement of Civil Immigration Laws, which instructs DHS officials that the fact an individual is a removable non-citizen should not alone be the basis of an enforcement action against them. Wow. Personnel should not rely on the fact of conviction alone. So personnel must not rely on the specifics of federal law. Instead, Mayorkas writes his own law. Number six, Mayorkas willfully exceeded his parole authority set forth in Section 212D5A of federal law that permits parole to be granted only on a case-by-case basis, temporarily, and for urgent humanitarian reasons or a significant public benefit. Now, how did he violate that? A, he paroled aliens en masse in order to release them from mandatory detention, despite the fact that a United States Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit concluded in 2021, quote, paroling every alien DHS cannot detain is the opposite of the case-by-case basis determinations required by federal law. B, Mayorkas created, reopened, or expanded a series of categorical parole programs never authorized by Congress for foreign nationals outside the United States. He wrote his own laws, including for certain Central American minors, Ukrainians, Venezuelans, Cubans, Haitians, Nicaraguans, Colombians, Salvadorans, Guatemalans, and Hondurans, which enabled hundreds of thousands of inadmissible aliens to enter the United States in violation of the laws enacted by Congress under the Immigration and Naturalization Act. Number seven, Mayorkas willfully exceeded his release authority set forth in Section 236A of the law that permits in certain circumstances the release of aliens arrested on an administrative warrant, in that Mayorkas released aliens arrested without warrant despite they're subject to a separate applicable mandatory detention requirement set forth in federal law. Now, what are the consequences to the country? The case that he has committed a high crime is beyond dispute. These aren't policy arguments. I spend more time on this program unraveling the lies in the media, the lies by the Democrat Party, and quite frankly, the lies by the rhinos led by Mitch McConnell than I do anything else. Because I have to be a counterweight to all the propaganda that's being pushed out there. The consequences have been devastating as a result of his committing high crimes and misdemeanors, high crimes specifically. That is, crimes, political crimes against the body politic. During fiscal years 2017 through 2020, an average of about 590,000 aliens each fiscal year were encountered as inadmissible aliens at ports of entry on the southwest border or apprehended between ports of entry. Thereafter, Mayorkas' tenure in office, that number skyrocketed from 590,000 to 1,400,000 in 2021, over 2.3 million in fiscal year 2022, over 2.4 million in fiscal year 2023. Similarly, during fiscal years 2017 through 2020, an average of 130,000 persons who were not turned back or apprehended after making an illegal entry were observed along the border each fiscal year. During Mayorkas' time in office, the number more than trebled to 400,000 in fiscal 2021, 600,000 in fiscal 2022, and 750,000 in fiscal 2023. During Mayorkas' tenure as Secretary of Homeland Security, the immigration court backlog has more than doubled from about 1.3 million cases to over 3 million cases. The exploding backlog is destroying the court's ability to administer justice and provide appropriate relief in a time frame that does not run into years or even decades. During Mayorkas' tenure as Secretary of Homeland Security, approximately 450,000 unaccompanied alien children, minors, have been encountered at the southwest border, and the vast majority have been released into the United States. As a result, there's been a dramatic upsurge in migrant children being employed in dangerous and exploitive jobs in the United States. Sex slavery, pornography, same with young girls, same with women, same with some men. What's going on the border is inhumane, it's anarchy, it's chaos. It's slavery, sex slavery, other forms of slavery. Drug cartels are making tens of billions of dollars. Now we have a problem with communist Chinese nationals pouring into the country. We have no idea who they are. They're not properly vetted. We don't have the personnel. The personnel that they wanted to hire under the phony bipartisan act would be basically rubber stamping entry, rubber stamping parole, rubber stamping the illegality that Mayorkas and Biden have already set into motion. Mayorkas's failure to enforce the law drawing millions of illegal aliens to the southwest border has led to the reassignment of U.S. Border Patrol agents from protecting the border from illicit drug trafficking to processing illegal aliens for release. Mayorkas has degraded public safety by leaving wide swaths of the border effectively unpatrolled, as U.S. border agents are diverted from guarding the border to processing for unlawful release the heightening wave of apprehended aliens. During Mayorkas's tenure, the U.S. Border Patrol has encountered an increasing number of aliens on the terrorist watch list. In fiscal years 2017 through 2020, combined, 11 non-citizens on the terrorist watch list were caught attempting to cross the southwest border between ports of entry. 11 in a three-year period. That number increased to 15 in fiscal 2021, 98 in fiscal 2022, 169 in fiscal 2023, and only part of this year, already 49. And keep in mind, we don't catch them all. There are hundreds of millions of people coming into this country called gotaways. We don't know a damn thing about them. And the ones we catch, we almost don't know a damn thing about them. Those cops, the NYPD in New York, who were assaulted, who were beaten by illegal aliens. Most of those illegal aliens who attacked them were part of a vicious Venezuela gang, now an international gang. We now have in our country this vicious Venezuela international gang teaming up with MS-13. We didn't have this 3 years ago. All kinds of consequences, economic, criminal, so forth. Our sovereignty is being destroyed. And of course, our enemy is going to try and push as many of their spies into our country as possible. Now, don't tell me these aren't impeachable offenses, that these are policy differences, or that we're opening Pandora's box to future impeachments. We're opening Pandora's box to future impeachment for those who deserve it. I just read to you, and I could have read more, of the articles of impeachment citing specific sections of a federal law that's been in place for decades, the Immigration and Naturalization Act, duly passed by Congresses, duly signed by presidents with amendments and so forth. And so Joe Biden and Mayorkas have decided they're going to change our federal immigration law, whether we like it or not, whether Congress likes it or not, and you're not going to have a damn thing to say about it. And so he issues 94 executive orders in his first days in office to open our borders, to violate federal law, to change parole, to change all the conditions for people to come into this country. He's attracted millions of people trying to get into this country. Our southern border has been destroyed. Our northern border is being destroyed. Our cities are being destroyed. And I might add our culture. People are not assimilating into our culture. It is being destroyed from many one, e pluribus unum. Now it's the opposite, from one many. And Joe Biden has done this. He can stop it. They used this phony bipartisan bill, which had about four Republican senators supporting it, Mitch McConnell the lead, which would have enshrined every single violation of law I just told you about, every single violation of our criminal statutes, every single problem that we are facing would have been enshrined. They would have waved it around like a Neville Chamberlain type saying, see, we have a bipartisan agreement. Everybody, you're safe. Everything is fine. It's not a problem. Now you know what impeachment is really about. And now you know that Mayorkas deserved it. And even more, the same article of impeachment should be issued now against Joe Biden.
Lastly today, here's a video clip which we played only the audio of on our last show. I wanted to play the video because it has more impact. It's an interview recently of Alex Jones, host of The Alex Jones Show on Infowars.com, by former Trump advisor Steve Bannon on his War Room program. The interview is about the Biden regime and its smuggling cartels, and its allies at the United Nations, World Economic Forum, CCP, and drug and human smuggling cartels moving illicit drugs and people across the U.S. border on an unprecedented scale, all by design and according to plan, with the goal of utterly destroying the USA as we have known it.
Alex Jones, Tuberville, Senator Tuberville on Friday in the War Room said the pier in Gaza is being built specifically to take 750,000 Palestinians that Egypt doesn't want, Jordan doesn't want,
get them into Europe and fly them directly to the United States. And that Todd Benzman told us in the opening of the show that his senior sources in Customs and Border are telling him they've already been told that the Coast Guard's going to escort the flotilla in, and you're going to have hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Haitians in Florida. Your thoughts, sir?
Well, you're absolutely right, Steve. And when Congressman Gates was questioning those officials, he said, is this going to cause a flood? They basically agreed. We already have a flood of Haitians and others out of the Caribbean, out of Latin America, after 3 years of lockdowns that the UN and IMF and World Bank forced on them. So that's the angrier world that Klaus Schwab's been talking about. The Middle East is collapsing. Africa is collapsing. Many areas of Asia are in deep trouble. Latin America has huge issues. This is all part of the UN exacerbating these crises and then busing in, flying in, and also using boats to bring these people in. And then they get the new congressional districts for themselves. They then populate key districts that are already Democrat. This is their admitted battle plan. Democrat congressmen and women, and of course, people like John Podesta, brag in the New York Times that this is their recipe to win. They may not be able to vote right away, though a lot of them do very quickly, but it does create those new congressional districts. And even if it's a red state like Florida, the Haitians and others are directed, because the aid's there, to the blue cities, to those areas, and they expand the Democrat districts. Texas is almost purple right now. It'll soon shift to blue because of this exact same strategy. So as we said earlier, the border is the number one issue. It's how they're destroying our sovereignty. It's how the Democratic Party is importing a permanent underclass they control. And so this is the time to put massive pressure on the Biden administration and on DHS and all the rest of these people that have lowered the drawbridge to our republic to shut this down now. And regardless, even if they still bring in a million or two of these people, that will then politically supercharge the population even more. We get Trump in, and then we've got the money and resources, because it costs 10, 20, 30 times, we know, to actually keep them here. We will ship their asses out of this country. There are billions of people starving to death because of UN globalist policies. They're almost all military-age men that are getting here. They're leaving the women and children behind. This is a lifeboat that's already overwhelmed and sinking. This is life or death. We must deport all military-age men that came here illegally, whether they're black, white, or brown. Deport their ass at the point of bayonets with the U.S. military.
Walk me through, you talked about the UN NGOs. What is their role in this invasion of our country?
Well, if you remember, it's so critical. They fired Lou Dobbs 6-7 years ago, whatever it was, off Fox Business, because he showed documents where Soros was getting billions a year from the State Department and U.S. aid to give $2,000 and $1,000 and $3,000 and euro cards to the illegals coming in out of Africa and the Middle East into Europe. And then he was starting the same thing, the Darien Gap, where South and Central America come together. They're in Panama. So they've built these giant UN bases that we now all know about because of you and Michael Young and countless others covering it ad nauseum, and InfoWars covering it. And so they're radically expanding them for this planned forced migration that they're executing. So the UN are the people running this and in command of it. That's why Trump pulled us out of the UN Migration Refugee Treaty, because under that treaty, it puts the UN in control of who runs it and who can come in. When you go to the Texas border and there's these giant facilities in every town on the border, 4 or 5, 6 football field size tents they put up, and it's the UN NGOs there, and they have their signs up ordering the Border Patrol, ordering the State Guard around. They are in charge. And so we have to cut the funding off to the NGOs, to the open society. No more government funding to them. That cuts the head off the snake. But then we got the bigger problem of it being the State Department that funds worldwide more than half of the, quote, refugee migrant resettlement. So as usual, just like the U.S. government created the UN, the criminals inside the U.S. government that are working against our own country's interest and parlaying us into a larger corporate world government, they are the ones directing the UN that then directs this operation. So the Pentagon of the New World Order is really the large think tanks and large tax-free foundations that control the U.S. government, that in turn controls the UN, that controls the NGOs, to directly bring the United States down into third world status because they don't want a free, open, powerful nation that people aspire to because that's then the global model. They want everybody lowered, as Ross Perot warned, under NAFTA and GATT. We wouldn't raise Mexico. It would lower Americans, Canadians, and down the level of the Mexicans. And so this is a long-term strategic plan. We're now entering the third act of this. We've already gone through the first and second act. They are 65, 67, 70% done, and now is the death blow. So that's why people are waking up, because it's so incredibly obvious. But this is all in official UN plans that go back to the 90s, the replacement migration documents from 2000 that are on the UN's website. It's all there. It's a plan. We have the battle plan. And again, we are now well into their attack.
What Alex talking about, the compact on global migration, which Trump got out of the first week we were in the White House. I want to go, in the time I got remaining, a couple of minutes, I want to go back to this about deportation. The resolution in the House yesterday, the Democrats, 14 signed on, is bipartisan, admitted there's 9 million illegal alien invaders in right now. I think that number is 10 to 12. But by the time Biden regime is finished with this, there'll be 12 to 15 million. Just give me a minute or two, Alex Jones, given your understanding of the military and law enforcement, how do you actually deport 12 million people out of the United States?
It's very simple. They've already got databases of the MS-13 and the main criminals, and they, because they're dangerous, they SWAT team them. The first week Trump is in office, and they send a message, and then they ship them directly out of the nation. Tens of thousands are of gang members from Venezuela alone. If Venezuela doesn't take them back, we put massive sanctions on Venezuela's oil. That's fine. We've got plenty of it here. You make examples of the home countries to make sure they're going to accept them. And you round up the hardened criminals first, you know, 100,000 of them or so. That can be done quickly. And then through all these government issued cell phones and debit cards and NGOs, you start arresting, because of all the fraud and money laundering and crime and human trafficking of children, you start arresting, indicting and arresting some of the NGO heads of these different NGOs, Catholic charities, that Jewish charity, the Soros charities. You play hardball, and then they will contact all of the illegal aliens they brought in and told them to report to deportation centers regionally, and then we'll give them debit cards to go the other way. Hell, give them $10,000 debit cards. I mean, that'll save us, you know, millions off what it would cost to take care of each one of these people. Upwards of 90% of these illegals never even get jobs. They get permanently put on welfare. They're here to destroy the country. So it's a military option. That's not martial law. The Democrats already know Trump's going to do this, so they're calling it martial law. No, the federal government is supposed to control the borders, and it's supposed to find invaders and ship them out. And yeah. So you go after the NGOs, you cut their money off, you start indicting them, you round up the criminals first, and then you start going to the work sites and all the other places and then the Democrat events, and you literally say, let me see your ID, when they've got probable cause, and you grab them and you throw them in the back of a truck and you ship their ass out of here.
There's 1.1 million deportation orders right now in the Biden regime. You just start with that. I agree with you, incentivize, but you got to play hardball. I love your way of playing smash mouth with the NGOs and other countries. We got a minute. They're trying to shut you down. How can our audience, our vast international audience, also get to you, Alex Jones?
Well, regardless, I'm going to still be on air regardless, but they're very close to shutting down InfoWars. People can support us at InfoWarsStore.com. Great products. Also, they can tune into the show at InfoWars.com/show and follow me on X at Real Alex Jones. And also, I've got a great sponsor with a really incredible high-quality nano-silver products like toothpaste and more. It's my dad's company. He's my big sponsor. And that's DrJonesNaturals.com, just DrJonesNaturals.com. People can also get my book, The Great Awakening, Part 2 of The Great Reset, at InfoWarsStore.com. So thank you so much, Steve Bannon, for all you do.
It's fantastic. Get Great Awakening, introduction by Stephen K. Bannon. I love that book. Alex Jones, you're the best. Love you, man.
Makes you think the world has gone mad, doesn't it? You have to understand, all this has been in the making for years, with many years of popular culture brainwashing of the public, greatly enhanced by money from communist China. The Wall Street financier types and their American business cohorts have for decades, with the considerable assistance from the U.S. government, been pouring money into the Chinese economy to make themselves and their CCP counterparts fabulously wealthy. These people have no intention of giving up this cozy relationship, which was at least somewhat threatened by Trump's policies intended to slow down, if not stop, the destruction of America as we have known it. In short, many of our American supposed elites have sold out our country to the CCP and their masters in the CCP. And this would include Hollywood, or much of it. But these fools actually believe they will keep their wealth and freedoms due to being part of the elites running the shambles of America that will result in their treasonous sellout to communist China. Under totalitarianism, there is no dissent or debate about what's best for the people, that is, the slaves to the system, you and me. The totalitarians are always correct in their decisions about what is supposedly best for the masses of people they control. And anyone who disagrees is always wrong. Like new Argentinian President Javier Milei has observed, if you don't agree with the leftists, they'll kill you. Or if they can't kill you, they will do everything in their power to otherwise absolutely destroy you, as they are presently doing to Donald Trump. Even Donald Trump is claiming that Joe Biden is befuddled and doesn't know what he's doing. Well, obviously he has cognitive issues and he does appear to be moving towards some form of dementia. While this is true to some extent, we are not giving Biden enough credit for his actions. He's a dedicated servant of international communism and its sibling globalism. Biden serves the crazies at the World Economic Forum, where this new world order globalism and they also worship communist China, while always longing for an eventual merging of communism and capitalism that will supposedly transform the world into a socialist utopia. Thus we have the World Economic Forum concept of stakeholder capitalism, otherwise known as state-owned enterprises, as is practiced in communist China, where the government runs and owns everything. As Seamus Brunner, author of the new book Control Oligarchs, Exposing the Billionaire Class, Their Secret Deals, and the Globalist Plot to Dominate Your Life, has observed, leadership types at the World Economic Forum have been instrumental in advising the CCP on and promoting stakeholder capitalism. This is the governmental system they would like to see implemented worldwide, of course, with them in charge and profiting from it all. Show me one country where communism or another form of totalitarianism has taken hold, which has not been followed by mass murder, slavery, and terror. But like I said, so many of these imbecilic servants of their ideal of a communist utopia can't seem to even consider that many of them will likely also perish alongside the rest of us in this nightmarish world government system they want so badly. So as Election Day 2024 approaches, those of you who love and cherish freedom and America as we have known it, which is far from perfect, but as we firmly believe, is far better than any other governmental system on earth, we urge you to pray for a miracle. Because if the communist left is able to stage another election coup in 2024 and hold on to their power, where will you flee when the state-sponsored murder, slavery, and terror eventually begins in earnest? Sorry to be ending today's show on such a negative note, but that's the way I see things. That's all for another show. As always, we hope you found today's content of interest and value. You can watch and listen to a podcast of today's show when it's posted shortly on the Jim Benson Show pages here at bbsradio.com. Look for us with another show in this same time slot 2 weeks from today. Have a great rest of your day and evening.